AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special episode of the Empire Podcast in association with our chums at Warner Brothers. And this is dedicated to It, Welcome to Derry. Oh, or should I say, It, Welcome to Derry, Chapter 1.
Ooh.
Oh, because that was one of the big revelations at the end of the final episode, the 8th episode of the first season of It, Welcome to Derry. The prequel, of course, to Andy Muschietti's It Chapter 1 and It Chapter 2, his adaptation of the Stephen King classic horror novel. Yes, this is just Chapter 1 of the TV prequels, folks. We're going to be returning to Derry at some point soon, and maybe 27 years earlier. Exciting stuff. And join me to discuss It, Welcome to Derry, are a Derry girl and a Derry boy. All of our own. They all float down here. I'm talking, of course, about Helen O'Hara.
Hello.
Hello, Helen. You are very much our Pennywise.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. And James Dyer.
Beep, beep, Chrissy.
James, of course, is pound foolish.
True story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, though, you're very good with money, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you're tight. Is what I'm trying
right,
to say.
Right, okay. Wow. I mean, it's fair. It's
well, fair. Yeah. You keep it clasped close to your chest. You have one of those little purses that you put your pound coins in.
I keep all of my money in a lockbox in my mind. Sealed away safely. Yes. Like Dick Halloran.
Just like Dick Halloran. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Dick Halloran. Did not expect to see him in this show.
But that's interesting, isn't it? Because this was pitched and out there as an origin story for It, as a kind of prequel to It, but it's also a kind of a lore-building origin story for The Shining and then Doctor Sleep as well.
So. Yes, and with numerous other Stephen King references in there as well. But Dick Halloran, in case people don't know who we're talking about, obviously in the show, major, major character in It, Welcome to Derry, and played by Chris Chalk, of course. And he is a, I'd say, a beloved character in Stephen King lore.
Yeah.
He is a major supporting character in The Shining, of course, played in the Stanley Kubrick film by Scatman Crothers, and played in Doctor Sleep by Carl Lumbly.
Yeah.
And he has a very different fate in Doctor Sleep than he does in the movie adaptation of The Shining.
Mm.
That always surprised me when I watched The Shining for the first time. Because I think I read The Shining before I saw the film.
Oh, interesting.
I think I did. Either way, it surprised me.
Right.
So either if I saw the film first and then read the book, that surprised me.
Okay.
And if I read the book first and then saw the movie, it surprised me. Because Dick Halloran, who has the shine, of course, very, very powerful, and he helps teach Danny Torrance to, you know, to use it in some ways. He's the Obi-Wan Kenobi, if you will, of this franchise. He gets a sort of shine signal, doesn't he, from Danny Torrance. And he runs to the Overlook Hotel, runs to it to save the day. And in the book, he saves the day, or at least he helps save the day. And he helps get, you know, Danny Torrance and Wendy Torrance out, and he gets them to safety. And then in the film, nobody gets, James, nobody gets. He gets an axe to his chest for his troubles.
Yeah, it's harsh, I would say. Harsh.
It's not great.
No.
you don't want that.
And judging by this film, he's had a pretty tough life up to that point
he's
as
not
well.
He's not had the most fun.
You know?
And, you know, we see his grandfather, obviously, in this, in some of his visions, and there's some grim backstory to that in Doctor Sleep.
Yes, and of course, we get to see those visions.
We do.
Welcome to Derry. So we get to see exactly why it's not a walk in the park for being Dick Halloran.
No.
Of course.
Exactly. It's a fascinating show, the way that they've kind of tried to layer this kind of wider King lore in, and also layer this into the lore of It as well, and kind of connect characters from this show with completely different characters. You know, they didn't have to. They could have just gone with the town, with the setting, but they've kind of created links between this and the characters in the novel, in the, and in, of course, the film, films of It, which I kind of enjoyed because I was dense enough that I didn't pick up on everything immediately, and it was only, it sort of unfolded for me as I was watching the show. I was a bit like, hey, isn't that name a little familiar? Wasn't there another Richie involved in this series at one point? You know, and things like that sort of kind of came to me gradually, which I quite enjoyed.
It is, honestly, I'd hesitate to say it's Stephen King's best work, but it is my favorite of Stephen King's books. There's just something about Pennywise. There's something about it where not a lot of his books genuinely scare me. This one scares the life out of me. It scared me before I even read it, just from the cover with just the eyes and the storm drain. Yeah. Okay. Something about that image always frightened me about it. And so when I read it, it really freaked me out. And every iteration of that story that's been on screen, well, both in the TV version and the movie version, have always really scared me. And it's not that I have a pathological fear of clowns, but...
I mean, you would be forgiven for having a pathological fear of clowns.
I think Pennywise is the definitive, like, I mean, he started this.
See,
like, that's nightmare
thought,
fuel.
I would have thought you would love clowns.
Really?
Because clowns are fundamentally unfunny. And you love unfunny things.
That is true. But in this case, I fear them. But what I like about this is because when they did the two It movies, they altered the timeline slightly. So it takes place in late 80s.
Yes.
Right? So whereas originally it had taken place in the
50s.
In the 50s, right? So this takes place in essentially the timeline that the original book does. So it recreates the kind of It imagery and the It feel that I get from the book, which you didn't get from the films because they were moved up to the 80s.
Well,
so actually, this
enough,
feels very like Homeland It to me.
Yeah, it's getting that little bit closer, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think the sort of 27-year gap between It waking up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is really interesting because it does give you the option of having, like, this could be an anthology show, this could be, this could kind of keep going backwards in time, maybe. And I'm kind of excited by that. The only worry I have about that, I guess, after this season is that they've actually given you quite a lot of lore here and they've given you quite a lot of backstory. And so will they still be able to mine enough, you know, tension out of 27 years before this, out of 27 years before that, if we've sort of touched on some of those. But at the same time, like, I liked getting into a lot of that lore. I liked the way it developed. I liked the way they tried to sort of draw out, okay, why is it so focused on Derry?
Yeah.
You know, what's so special?
<we know.
laughs> Yeah. It's a lovely city and obviously has inspired many wonderful comedy shows. But
many wonderful comedy shows.
But yeah, I just thought that this was clever writing.
Yeah. And you can only have one more season with the clown now. Because now that we know when the creature adopts the sort of visage of Pennywise, that would be fine for the previous feeding session. So that would be the next season. But after that, we'd have to go in a different direction, which makes perfect sense. Because actually, they're very, I think, judicious in how they deploy Bill Skarsgård in this series. So we get quite a lot of him towards the end. But he doesn't turn up until, is it beyond halfway through the show?
Yeah, pretty
like,
much.
What we get is those horrific manifestations that begin, you know, with the evil flying baby monster. And then we have, I mean, there's all kinds of horrific things that it has historically taken the form of.
A lot of scary births.
A lot of scary births. Yeah.
I think this show overall could have been, as I'm speaking as a scaredy cat, like 30 to 40% less terrifying. I think that would have been okay. I was having a lovely time just following these people and seeing them kind of, you know, weave in and out of each other's
That's
lives.
That's the thing, right? The Losers Club, they're so nice to spend time with. And then this Egypt tries to eat them.
Yeah, okay, when you put it like that, I understand that the point of the show is to be scary, and I understand that this is a horror classic, and I do want my horror classic at the same time, but it was very scary.
Yeah, it was.
You know?
But I love it. I do love it. But this is interesting, because it is a story, it's a game of two halves, right? So you have the first half, which is terrifying the children, and then the second half is terrifying the adults. And inherently, the adults part of it has a very different feel to it. What this show does is it blends both of those two things together. So not only is Pennywise terrorizing children, but he's also engaged with the adults. In this case, the literal army. It's like they literally send in the army, didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, that was a pretty bold, audacious moment as well. Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here that I really, really enjoyed. And I think that there's really fertile ground
for chapters two and chapters three as well. You know, Andy Muschietti, who of course directed a number of episodes for this, including the finale and the first episode, of course, and his producing partner, his sister Barbara. Jason Fuchs is also the co-creator of the show. I think there's a lot of fertile ground for them to go into, and they've talked about the fact that it is each season is going to rocket back 27 years into the past and have different iterations of Pennywise. But as you say, just it, because can he be Pennywise when we get to 1908? Because we've met Bob Gray.
Yeah.
We know what he looks like. We know what he sounds like. So that's interesting.
I think that's going to be both a challenge and I guess an opportunity for them to really kind of push in a different direction.
Yeah.
With it. That will be really interesting. And I like that we got, like I say, I like that we got more lore, more mythology, you know, that the idea of the pillars holding him in place was a really interesting one. I thought that was fun. And also, like, the addition of the army genuinely was quite scary to me in the sense that, you know, I was kind of thinking of things like, maybe I'm thinking of like Good Omens, but I was thinking of like, are we going to have it trying to launch weapons? Like, is it going to try and start World War III? I genuinely at one point thought that was going to be the last episode, was going to be kind of him running crazy on the base, which would be potentially very bad, right? I was kind of wondering where they were going with that. But the idea that the army would try to weaponize fear, and also that it would try to use Leroy's lack of fear as a tool was really, really clever, just in the context of this overall monster. I thought that was really cool. I think that Jovan Adepo is fantastic in that performance, because he is often frantic. He's often really worried for people. He is a thinking person. Yeah. You know, he can see all the awful outcomes. But the lack of fear itself was really an interesting thing to play in this season, in this series.
But crucially, as the kids discover to their peril, not being afraid does not inure you against Pennywise's influence. Pennywise will find a way into your head regardless. But to your point, I like the idea, because of course the army would try to weaponize him if they could catch him. But I like the idea at the end that actually what they want to do is use him as a means of control, of population control.
Terrifying.
Of kind of like of public suppression. Literally he says, you know, there were no riots in the streets because they can use fear to control the population. And I thought that was a quite sinister, quite depressing, indictment of,
more sinister almost than what, it just does what's in its nature.
It's just hungry, just wants a snack.
But the idea of trying to weaponize it against your own populace, or against any populace, to be honest, is pretty horrific.
Sure is cuckoo. Like, he's a mad, crazy general man.
I mean, he's trying to marshal the unmarshalable, right? Is unmarshalable a word?
It is now.
We're in an unmarshalable world.
Yes. We are without Marshall.
Yeah, to quote the great Christmas song.
Yes, something like that. I thought he walked the line really carefully,
because he does.
Yeah, so close, but similar era. He really was so supportive at times, and so likable, avuncular. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, so maybe this is
a good
general. Like, it's, you know, it's not something we see often, but it's theoretically possible. And then in the last episode, not so much,
though he does get his comeuppance.
He does.
But I also enjoyed this, when you're talking about like population suppression and control and that kind of thing, that's getting into the 60s-ness of this time period. And I like the way they leaned into that. You know, even when the kids are trying to suppress their emotions with Valium, which is like the hot new thing that all their moms are taking. Yeah. You know, that's very 60s. All the sort of, obviously, the civil unrest and the kind of activism of Will's mum, that kind of stuff, great.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see them try and weave that into this, you know, this classic monster
tale. That's King to me, though. Like King, for me, always feels like a 1960s set narrative. Like that the essence of King to me, I think, is summed up by that time period. You know, that's not to say his stories don't work when they're modernized, but I always feel that it feels more organic.
Mm. Well, I think like a lot of like writers in the 80s, he was writing about his own childhood. So that gives you 50s and 60s, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the classic books, the ones that people really, really love, would have come out between 74, 75 to probably 1994, something like that. So he's automatically
by default, I guess, setting stuff like that, like in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But it's the characters that, for me, that bring me back to King again and again and again. He's my favorite author by some distance. I hope Lee Child is not listening to this. But
Lee Child said nothing.
Oh, what a dagger to the heart that would be. I love Stephen King unreservedly. And yes, he has terrified me over the years, but I come back for the amazing writing.
Yeah.
But he quite often doesn't get the due that he deserves. And it's his characterizations that keep me coming back again and again and again. He has this incredible ability to evoke the sense of time and place, but also he is capable of writing really great, conflicted, real characters that feel real, heroes that have flaws and foibles. He's also capable of writing about great evil. Mm. I think some of the Stephen King bad guys over the years have just been absolutely, you wouldn't want to meet them on a bad day, let alone in a storm sewer in Derry, Maine. Pennywise is up there. His ability to dig into the dark side of the human psyche, I think, is pretty much unparalleled.
And even the forms that Pennywise takes, you know, from the book onwards, but clowns, inherently scary. You know, then giant spider monsters, incredibly scary.
But that'll do it for you, right?
I mean, that would 100% do it. But then, you know, all of these other kind of forms and shapes and influences that he takes and just drawing directly from your nightmares.
Yeah.
It's a very powerful portrayal of something that is just primordial evil and can take whatever is going to screw you up the most.
Lily, the most upsetting for me was Lily's dad. Like when he kept returning as Lily's sliced up dad. That was just horrible.
Sorry, don't mind.
Chris was like, oh, it was so funny.
It was just a jolly jape. So let's talk about this show as a, as it exists, as a companion piece. It is a prequel, but it's also a companion piece to the two It movies that Andy Muschietti directed.
The Hit It movies.
The Hit It movies, Hit Chapter 1 and Hit Chapter 2. And I loved both of those films. Mm. I mean, I love the Tim Curry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Miniseries
as well. Yeah, which is also terrific. Tommy Lee Wallace directed that. That's really, really great. But there was something so devilish and impish about those two It movies. Pennywise was terrific, but again, it's the characters. It's a Losers Club.
Yeah.
Mm. I loved spending time with those guys and hanging out with those guys and getting to know them to the extent that you don't want them to die. And that is something that is very much echoed here. They don't call themselves the Losers Club, our heroes, but they are the precursors.
And the term does get used. I was glad to just the losers, in the final episode, which I enjoyed.
So we have obviously Matilda Lawler as Marge. We have Amanda Christine as Ronnie, Clara Stack as Lily. We have Blake Cameron James as Will, and poor Rich. Poor Rich. Arian S. Cartaya as Rich Santos.
I love him so much.
So how did you feel when he...
I'm not okay. I'm really not okay. And that stuff did make me cry.
Was her knight.
He was so sweet and so enthusiastic about his... Like, when he got his moment of drumming and it's like, and he's on a date with a girl and he's bought her a Coke at the bar. Like, he's being really cool. Yeah. He's feeling good, you know. And then he basically cons her to save her life. Just what a guy. I mean,
did literally get fridged.
She did. She did get fridged in the best possible way. No, I loved him. I loved him a lot. And he was my hero. And I like that they gave him a little bit of a kind of grace note at the end.
Yeah.
And that he wasn't one of its victims. He isn't stuck in that particular hell of being attached to it. He is, you sense, a free floating sort of... A free ghost, if that makes sense, or a free spirit.
Smoke inhalation is much better.
No, he still died, but he didn't. He kind of died on his own terms.
He didn't like eat his soul or whatever it does. Yeah,
exactly. Mm. And he's there to be with his parents and comfort them to some degree in their grief, and be with his friends and hear the nice eulogy they gave for him. You know, and it's something. And he was there to help them when they needed it. More importantly,
An extra pair of hands.
Oh, I just...
Right at the death, so to speak.
Not okay.
Oh, that's a shame. James, you were okay with it? Or did you mourn the loss of Rich?
I did mourn the loss of Rich. I thought it was very sad. Mm. Very sad.
And that's one of the big set pieces, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
The black spot. Mm. Which is something, again, we
kind of knew was going to happen. It's interesting watching the machinations and the way that the Machetes and Fuchs put all the pieces in place.
Yeah, it's also quite sinister in the way that it is set up by Madeleine Stowe's character to draw it out, because it would be pain and screaming and hatred and fear and all of the things that it feeds on. So of course that drew it to that place.
Yeah.
Just so that she could see it. And I found that her interaction with it, I found that really fascinating, because she thinks it's her father. It's not her father. It knows it's not her father, but it plays along with it. And it seems to have his memories, which is why it asks her to do the bow. And it's like the point where it's just going to let her go, because it's like, I need to go to sleep because I'll come back. I always do. Mm. And then it's only when she's like, you're not my father. And then it's like, you know what?
Yeah, she's not going to be useful to me anymore.
Yeah.
I think she has been useful to it, obviously, with that girl in the hospital before.
Right. And bringing it snacks.
Yeah, and now it realizes that, oh no, she's onto me, and therefore she could cause trouble of some sort. So, yeah.
And so it shines the deadlights.
Oh, the deadlights. That looks like fun. Don't you think?
Not really.
Well, they all float.
Yeah, I'd like to float. I mean, wouldn't you like to float down here?
Can you just go to the spa, go to the pool, take a pool noodle, you know. It can be arranged without, like, losing your soul.
I've been talked around. Helen, what did you think of the black spot?
Oh, it's so upsetting. And just, like, lots of lovely people having a lovely time and then bloody racists, isn't it? No, it was really upsetting. I think it was, again, part of this kind of political commentary of the period and the just sort of tensions erupting and the way that its presence in Derry corrupts and brings out everyone's worst possible side and makes everything worse than it would be. Because, you know, Maine, mostly because it's like 99% white, I believe, even today, is not one of the most racially riven parts of the US. But the idea, I think, is that, you know, it infects and corrupts and makes worse everything around it. And that's why this kind of violence of the Deep South then erupts in the far north as well. But yeah, it's just incredibly upsetting to watch and horrific and really terrifyingly staged. I mean, as it unfolded, you kind of feel, oh, it's a wooden shack burning. People are going to be able to get out. And then just one thing after another was stopping the bullets flying. Yeah. It was really scary.
Yeah. It was really interesting to me that the Madeleine Stowe characters, you say, Ingrid Kirsch, so she is a character from It Chapter 2.
Yeah.
And we get to see that at the end of It Welcome to Derry Chapter 1. So we get that nice little time jump at the end where it goes 26 years later. And we see what I am presuming is the death by suicide of Beverly Marsh's mother.
Yeah.
So that's Sophia Lillis at the end, who played Bev in both It Chapter 1 principally, and then, of course, a little bit in It Chapter 2. And we know that her father is abusive to her. We see a little bit of that there. But that feels to me like that's almost Bev's origin story in a way. We're seeing it at the end.
That's what I thought as well. Like, it's almost like when he pushes her away there, it feels like she didn't expect that violent a reaction. Like, maybe he hasn't been a great dad, but maybe he hasn't been actively violent up until that point. And it feels like that's the thing that clues us in that, oh, this is it, is back. And I think that's the moment that it seems to clue in Kirsch that this is it back and not just a tragedy in the care home. You know, that, oh, it's beginning again. This is the start of the cycle. I don't know. That's how I read that scene anyway.
Yeah. And of course, Mrs. Kirsch in chapter two, she's one of Pennywise's personae.
Mm.
So she, you know, she's very tricksy indeed. Interestingly, the actress who played her in Chapter 2 is the same actress who plays her at the end of Welcome to Derry, Chapter 1, an actress called Joan Gregson, who sadly passed away in June.
Oh.
So this is probably her swan song. And it's a really good swan song as well. It's a really creepy swan song. And she just stares at Bev and starts smiling malevolently because what she wants, what she's been waiting for, which is the return of Pennywise, is finally happening.
How long after that does it say it takes place? Because it's 88.
26
it?
Years later. It's so 26. It's just, I guess, Pennywise is going,
just waking
at this
up.
Point. Yeah, just scratching his back, going, oh, God, what's going on? Doing a little bit of turning like that. What do you do in the morning when you get up?
I spring out of bed.
And terrorize the children.
And terrorize the neighborhood.
James sleeps in a storm drain. We don't really have those in the UK, do we? Not really.
We just have little drains on the floor. You couldn't get down there.
You couldn't.
You couldn't haunt a storm drain.
He's been trying.
I have tried endlessly, but I can't fit.
Helen, you ever try to haunt a storm drain?
Yeah, obviously, I think we've all been through that phase, haven't we?
Yeah, we've all been there.
But it was really hard getting the balloons down there without popping them. So I just gave up.
You meant to go down first and then blow up the balloons, you moron.
Oh, well, there we go. That's where I went wrong.
Oh, dear Lord. I just don't have it in me to haunt a storm drain.
Oh.
It would be cold. It would be wet. It would smell.
It would.
It would smell, yeah.
I'm just saying. Anyway, what was your question, James? You were saying something about, you know, because it's when Pennywise comes back, right?
Yes. It's just the timeline. I was thinking exactly when it takes place, because it is 88 at that point.
But, yes. Yeah,
the next course is served.
Mm. Yes. I was wondering if we would see any of the Losers Club.
Well, we don't see any of them, but we see, obviously, their parents, because yes. Will Hanlon is Mike Hanlon's dad. Marge will be Marge Tozier, which will be Richie's mother.
Yes.
There's a lot of connective tissue there. And, you know, lest we forget, Sheriff Police Chief, I should say, Bowers, would be Henry Bowers' grandfather.
Yes, that's right. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, whoa, of course.
Yeah. The bad bully.
That's right.
King writes great bad bullies.
Oh, he really does.
Yeah, he does.
He must have had a terrible time at school, I'm wondering.
Yeah, they're the worst. I still think of like Ace in Stand By Me, and
he's not Ace.
No, he's really not.
No,
he's not even a joker. He's a card that should be thrown from the pack.
Yeah, yes, he should be. He should be. I know we didn't see them, and we have hints. And yes, Marge is Richie's mum, which must be a weird thing to know.
Mm. Well, also introduces an entirely new wrinkle, which is the idea that Pennywise sees through time, sees his own end, that the end, the past, the present, the future are all the same to it.
Yeah.
Which asks many, many questions.
But then if it doesn't work on linear time, then it doesn't necessarily always know that.
Yeah.
So maybe it sometimes knows that, but doesn't always. Because it's not the most stable of
beings. No, it's not. Well, the thing is that they posit the idea that maybe it will attempt to alter the trajectory of time by going back and undoing things.
But you can't do that.
Well,
we hope.
Depending on what model of time travel Pennywise subscribes to. So.
That's true. Oh, no.
Yeah.
This could be very bad. Thinking that's what you think might happen in chapters 2 and 3, if there are chapters 2 and 3, that it could be basically trying to undo its own
fate. Monster is thinking kind of open loop grandfather paradox as opposed to the trousers of time.
Explain this for people like me who are stupid.
Oh, good God. So, yes, the different forms of time travel. There's the idea that you have the many worlds theory, whereby any change you make just sets off another splinter on the tree of life, and so you get just another reality forms, but it doesn't affect the main timeline. There's the closed loop time travel paradox, where you go back in time, but any change you make will not affect the future. And then there's, I think I'm getting this right, and then the open loop is, yes, then you have the back to the future effect, where anything you do fundamentally in the past fundamentally affects the future.
So Pennywise is aware of his penny demise, right?
Yes.
Correct.
So he knows he's going to die twice at the hands of the Losers Club.
Yes.
Right, and Richie Tozier is going to be a big part of that. Played by Finn Wolfhard, of course, in It Chapter 1, and Bill Hader, in It Chapter 2. Exciting. So he, I think, understandably, listen, I don't want to sympathize with a giant spider monster who can turn into a scary clown who lives in a storm drain and tries to pull the arms off children, but you can understand why he would want to stop this from happening,
right? I mean,
right?
That seems fair, yes. We can all empathise with Pennywise in this particular case.
Self-preservation.
Not empathise exactly, but yes, logically it makes sense.
Yeah.
But also, you can understand why people might want to kill Pennywise, what with the aforementioned pulling arms off children thing.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, name one reason why, and then you named it.
I did, yes. And I could have named many more.
Oh, also, name three more reasons why people will want to kill Pennywise.
Okay. Turns into a giant flying baby bat monster and terrorizes cinema goers.
Yeah. Why don't we try to make an effort to understand him instead of condemning him?
Because he's too busy killing people instead of giving them the chance to understand it.
It has to be said, like, giant flying baby monster that can actually kill you, that's taking 4DX to a whole other level.
It really is. Like,
honestly, that's a cinematic experience that certain filmmakers
never
would dream
on.
About.
It never caught on. Isn't it weird? Very strange.
But
yeah.
What I'm saying, Helen, is that no one has really... I mean, it's interesting because there are dialogue scenes in this show where people are kind of talking to Pennywise. I really love that scene with James Remar in the final episode where he's kind of... just Pennywise is there frozen and he's kind of having a conversation with Pennywise. And one-sided conversation nonetheless, but I would get the hell out, by the way. I would not be having a conversation with the guy, but what I'm saying is that perhaps if we took time to talk to him, to understand what his deal was, then he maybe wouldn't need to rip the arms off so many people or turn into a giant baby bat spider monster thing.
It's a fascinating theory, Chris,
just saying,
that I would suggest falls down on several moments in this show. For example, like, we do have Mrs. Kirsch try and talk it to him, woman to father figure monster. And it doesn't go well for her, you know? Mm. I don't think that this can be talked out. And I think the reaction he has when people do try to talk seriously to him and say things like, give back my friend, is to, you know, make fun of them.
Don't grip my arm off.
And then try and rip their arms off. You know, like, he's not a nice guy. I'm sorry. I don't wish to sound judgmental.
He just hasn't met the right person yet.
Well, he's had a while. He's been around for millennia.
But then he pulled their arms off.
And ate their essence.
Yeah.
Have I got fish on my face?
That's actually pretty good.
That was a good line. That was a really horrible moment.
His Pennywise is pretty good. That is pretty good.
Worryingly
good. Comes from living
good.
In a storm drain.
All right, I asked you to name three more reasons why people should...
I did the flying bat baby monster terrorizing again, cinema-goers, a group close to our hearts. There's that. There's the turning into people's mothers and having terrifying birth scenes. Not good.
No, that's not great.
Yeah. There is the whole, I don't know, driving people into madness, using a school principal as a puppet.
Never go for Weekend of Bernie's.
Yeah, we don't really approve of that. We don't really approve of abducting entire schools or classes full of children. Again, frowned upon in polite society.
All right, she's convinced me.
I mean, there's just a few of these moments.
He's a bad one. So now we think that he is aware of his penny demise and he wants to head that off at the pass, quite understandably, I would say, which is one of the reasons why he tries to kill Richie so far unsuccessfully in It Chapters 1 and 2. It's why he tries to kill Marge again, so far unsuccessfully in Welcome to Derry, Chapter 1. In fact, it's posited at the end of the final episode that his motive for the next two seasons, Jimbo, might be going full Skynet.
Mm.
So he's tried to kill Sarah Connor. Now he's going to try and kill Sarah Connor's mum. And if that fails...
Grandma.
Kill Grandma? Or, like, how does he fit into this? Is he going to try and kill himself? And the whole background of it all. I'm fascinated to see where that pays off.
Mm. I like the fact that they've lent into the extraterrestrialness of the creature, because obviously that's held back in the book. They've discovered what it is eventually, but initially it's just a malevolent entity. But you can't undo that. Like, we already know that because we've seen the film. So this show starts very much like, yeah, it's an alien. Like, and we're gonna build out on this alien mythology and talk about where it came from and, you know, the fragments. It's essentially its kryptonite, like the fragments of its planet or its cage are what's used to contain it in Derry.
And it calls itself a planet eater? What's the word?
The eater of worlds. Eater of and worlds. Of children.
There you go. You're a Galactus fan. Chris, you should
it
love
hungers.
That.
You can see why I like him. I just like the cut of that guy's jib. What can I say? He likes to eat a world. Who doesn't like to eat a world every now and again?
It is an incredibly brilliant design for the monster. I mean, the Pennywise, obviously the basic Pennywise is the one we saw in the film, but all of the just variations on that, all of the use of shadows and sort of looming up as a silhouette, the way he moves, it's some disturbing shit.
And the way
shit.
He dances.
Yes.
But I quite like the blood look as well, when he's gone kind of sleeping, so you have the kind of blood staining going all the way up to his nose.
Yeah.
And then from then on, that's how we see him, completely red suit and then stained the bottom half of his face.
Yeah.
There was a lot of speculation, obviously, as this show unfolded, about how much Bill Skarsgård we would get. He was an executive producer. We knew he was going to be in it to some degree. But were you happy with the amount of Bill Skarsgård we got as Pennywise? Mm.
What did you think of his performance now that this is the third time he's played this character? In some ways, he seemed to be even more unhinged and psychotic in this show than he was in the movies. And what did you think of the Bob Gray aspect of that character?
I thought, I think he's absolutely terrific as Pennywise. I really just off the charts. Brilliant. Bob Gray was interesting because the performance with, you see him actually do his clown performance and the poor entertainment starved people of 08?
Yep.
Love him. And you can see that he is like a good clown. And this is what it looks like when you don't shower people with blood during your performance. And I thought that was nice. It was just a nice little moment to give the original character, I guess. But you also see him kind of being quite short with the kid backstage, who turns out, of course, to be a monster. So he's not a saint. He's not perfect.
Yes.
He's a good dad, but he's not a perfect dad either. And I thought that was a nice line for them to walk with the Bob Gray of it all. But yeah, he's really unhinged. I thought they did a really good job of holding him back for those first few episodes and letting other manifestations of the monster that we haven't seen before, apart from anything else, come out. Like, that gave us the sense of this guy can do a lot of different things. He is scary in a lot of different ways, and kind of reminding us of that before delivering the clown suit itself.
And I like the idea of why the creature adopts Pennywise, because it literally says, like, the children are drawn to you.
Mm.
And so, well, that could be handy for someone who eats children. but haven't we seen, like the pictures of, Pennywise historically, previously, they're in the films, aren't they? You see like old photographs of that. And it's interesting seeing what that is.
Yeah.
And who that Pennywise was.
Yeah.
And actually it was not malevolent at all. It's just an entertainer.
Yeah. Do you think that's something that might come into play in chapters 2 and 3, that, there is good in him? I felt it. Is Bob Gray completely gone now? Do you think?
Yeah. It has his memories, but I don't think.
I think if you see good in it, it's because it wants you to see that and it's using that against you.
You can't reason with Pennywise. You can't bargain with him.
It's the same way. I mean, I think one of the scariest and creepiest things in the show is the way it pretended to be a survivor of its own attack and used that as bait to get the kids down into the sewers. That was...
Yeah.
And actually, the whole fake out with, you've got one group of kids in the first episode or two, and then most of them die.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And you've got a whole other group of kids coming up behind. You know, that was a real fake out, because if you're in, if you're coming to this from...
These are our heroes.
These are our heroes.
Yeah.
And they did a good job of making them feel like these were the hero kids. And then just like rip that away from you.
Literally.
And then to have one of them, it's kind of what George R. R. Martin did in Game of Thrones, to have somebody come back from the dead, but as a, evil zombie, even worse than just leaving them dead. So much worse.
What do we think of Will, who in many ways is, Marge is Richie Tozier's mum, but in many ways he's the most direct connection there is. Like, Dick Halloran has no part to play going forward. He's off to some hotel. I wonder where he's going. It could be a nice hotel. I hope it's a 4-star wherever he's going.
Absolutely. I hope he's up in the mountains, get some clear air,
overlook maybe something nice.
Maybe a bit of snow.
Ah, sure.
I think he should maybe go to, stay in room 237.
Oh, no.
Would that be good? Yeah, it'd be nice.
Very specific.
Yeah, that's a weirdly specific thing to say. Why would I say that? But Will is the direct connection, because Dick is not going to show up in its chapter 1 and 2.
Yeah, I loved Will. I absolutely loved him. I mean, of course I did, because he's like a nerdy boy and, I identify strongly. And I just thought he was really well drawn. I thought that, the sort of, not conflict with his father exactly, but just misunderstanding, lack of connection was something that I think happens in families between certain people who just have very different interests. And yet they're both well-meaning and, it doesn't demonize either of them. They're both trying their best. They just don't speak a common language, at the beginning of the show. And I think what the show does is allow them to show the love they have for each other, despite that. So loved that. I loved Taylor Page as Charlotte, as the mum who has her own thing going on. I thought that was great, that she's not just, I wish you two would get along. She's also like, and I'm into the civil rights movement and trying to survive this racist town. A bit pissed you've brought us here, but I'm doing my best, She was great. So I loved that family unit. I just thought they were beautifully, beautifully drawn. And again, the sort of the teen romance, kind of budding romance that Will had was nicely done with Ronnie Grogan as well. I just thought they were very sweet together. You know, it wasn't kind of, I don't know, it wasn't kind of obvious, like, hey, we're the cutest people here, we're going to hook up kind of a thing. It was just two slightly damaged, slightly scared kids finding each other.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, very much so. It's really interesting what you mentioned there. I mean, the setting of this, the, you know, it's a very deliberate thing. This is set in 1962 in America. And you have this thread that runs through the show where, you know, the principal character, the heroes of the show are African-Americans and African-American soldiers. And obviously what happens at the Black Spot is really, really interesting. What did you think about that aspect of the show? The fact that there's a very, very strong tie-in to the America of 1962, which was not a place that was welcoming to black people.
Well, that's in keeping with the novel, isn't it? Because the novel has a strong racism element in it, certainly the way Henry Bowers talks about Mike Hanlon. And that's something which is obviously less of an issue in the movie version, in the 1988 adaptation of it.
Yeah.
But it anchors this in place, because that's part of what America was then, isn't it?
So. Exactly, yeah, the place and time sort of aspect. And the idea of, you know, okay, you know, a black man like Leroy can now get ahead in the army and can forge a career. They're not sort of, you know, stuck to sergeant at best. You know, there is now a path. They've got rid of some of the literally formalized racism that there used to be. But at the same time, he still has to deal with it day after day after day.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of, again, lulled into a bit of a false sense of security with Shaw, with General Shaw, because he's not obviously racist that way. So you're like, okay, so this is one of the good guys, right? This is a good, and then of course it's a bit more complicated than that. But yeah, all that layering of stuff, the idea that he's so keen to bring his family here because he thinks things will be better here in the North than they were in their last posting, it's a rational thing to think. He doesn't know there's a monster living under the town, you know?
Didn't mention that.
Yeah. So I thought it was, built in well. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're about to wrap this bad boy up. Before we go, were there any scary moments or deaths that stuck in your mind?
One or two.
Yeah, because, you know, machete kills.
Oh, Chris.
Oh, dear.
Many, many, many scary moments. Again, as a scaredy cat, this was a very, very scary show for me to watch. I was not prepared. I should have been prepared. I wasn't prepared. At the risk of being basic, I do think it was the flying bat baby monster cinema.
I spent
a lot of time in cinemas. They are sacred places that should be safe. I did not like that.
There's no such thing as a safe cinema.
No, I agree with that sequence. Also because it's Teddy Uris is one of the kids that gets killed. Unless you were thinking that was Stanley Uris' father, clearly not, because he doesn't survive the first episode. But that must be Stan's uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We stand the loss of a great Teddy. Yeah, those moments are terrific. And, you know, the final swirling, I kind of wonder if there was another Stephen King reference with all the mist going on in the final episode.
Because summons a mist or a fog, depending on your, you know.
They do say fog.
Yeah.
No one says mist at any one point.
It feels more like the mist than the fog.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that it covers the whole town and you're just like, oh no.
Yeah, and he's lurking. He can come out anywhere.
Like a balloon.
And that bit where the girls have the pillar dagger thing. And they're all standing back to back, and he's running around them, and he can just appear out of nowhere. That was pretty spooky. Mm. Yeah, yeah, I like that. But you know, Pennywise, he will be missed.
Not really. I mean, I'm quite happy with him.
It's a pun, Helen.
He will be missed. He's missed.
M-I-S-T.
K-K-K-K.
Oh, okay. Well,
I think the most horrific death was that joke.
I think on that note, that is all the time we have, I'm afraid, for our very, very special episode of the Empire Podcast dedicated to It. Welcome to Derry, Chapter 1. In association, of course, with Warner Brothers. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you wish to see all the episodes of It, Welcome to Derry, Chapter 1, they're available right now to buy digitally wherever you get your digital shows. And it's available to pre-order right now. DVD, Blu-ray, 4K UHD. Hell's Bells, Pennywise in 4K UHD. How do you feel about that?
I'm very scared. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
I'm pre-ordering.
Oh, scary.
Delivered to the storm drain in which I live.
No, look, I mean, will I watch season two? Of course I will. And I will regret it in the same way that I do this one, because I will be very, very scared while I'm
very
doing so.
Scared.
But it's good enough that I put myself through this trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. It's available to pre-order right now on all those lovely shiny disc formats. And right now, all that remains is for me to say goodbye to my two colleagues of such lethal cunning. Thankfully, only their cunning is lethal. They're not lethal in any other way. Goodbye, James Dyer.
Goodbye, Chris. Please join us for the second part of this podcast, which will be in 27 years.
27 years ago?
Yes.
How do we do that?
We'll figure it out.
When is that?
A while ago.
2008? No.
What?
1998.
It's 2025, Chris.
Wait, excellent arithmetic.
Me fell math. That's impossible. 25 minus 27.
Yes.
1998.
Yes.
Jeepers. What were you doing in 1998?
I don't think podcasts existed, so not this.
Did you exist in 1998?
Yes, I'm older than Pennywise's last meal.
What were you doing?
In 1998?
Yeah.
Almost certainly just playing video games and watching TV. So what? Things have changed a lot.
I don't know. I was alone and unwanted and unloved in 1998. Hey! Also the same. Hell's Bells, what were you doing in 1998?
I was working very hard, by which I mean going to the cinema quite a lot, probably.
Yeah,
we're so
how
cool.
We've all grown as people.
All changed.
Are we the losers club?
We may be.
I think we might be the losers club.
Let's hope it's our only chance of surviving this clown, because it won't be by, you know, stealth or cunning or strength of arms.
I say that every time I do a podcast with James. I go, hopefully this is my chance of surviving this clown. Anyway, bye, James.
Bye, Chris.
That's well, you lost it.
I did. I went a little bit Scooby-Doo there.
Beep, beep. Oh,
we all float down here.
Soinks. Goodbye, Hell's Bells.
Toodaloo.
Yes, indeed. And it's goodbye for me. Quickly, to the storm drain. I'm expecting a delivery. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.